According to census numbers released last week, close to 17% of Arkansas's population was living below the federal poverty line in 2010 and 2011. During this week on Ozarks, we're examining the meaning of being poor in Arkansas, and we're exploring why the state has been chronically poor. The first report from Ithi Agnihotri-Madolkar discusses the various definitions of poverty.
The Merriam-Webster Dictionary defines poverty as the state of one who lacks a usual or socially acceptable amount of money or material possessions. Alternate definitions offered are scarcity, dearth, and debility due to malnutrition. In the past 20 years, the national poverty rate has gone from 13.1% in 1989 to 12.4% in 1999, and the latest census numbers show that from 2006 to 2010, 13.8% of the country's population was living below poverty level. In Arkansas, that number was as high as 18%. The state only trailed behind Mississippi and Louisiana in its poverty rate. The aforementioned definitions give us a general idea of what poverty is and who is poor. But how is poverty measured? How do we determine the number of those who are poor?
When we're talking about defining poverty, there's two different ways of looking at it. You can have an absolute definition or a relative definition. And an absolute definition of poverty has to do with, we set an absolute threshold above which people are poor or not poor.
That's Dr. Leah Hamilton, a visiting assistant professor at the University of Arkansas School of Social Work. Hamilton says, in the United States, we use an absolute definition of poverty and set a poverty threshold below which families will be called poor. For example, in 2011, a family unit of one person who made a little more than $11,000 annually qualified as poor. A family unit of four adults, not including children, that made about $23,000 annually was also categorized as poor. Poverty guidelines, a simplification of the poverty thresholds, are used by the Department of Health and Human Services for determining financial eligibility for certain federal programs. This system of measuring poverty that includes poverty thresholds and guidelines is close to 50 years old. It was proposed in 1965 by Molly Orshansky, a statistician with the U.S. Social Security Administration at the time.
And in 1965, she created what we call the Orshansky Index. And in 1965, we discovered that families were spending about a third of their income on food. So the current index takes the cost of a basic nutrition and multiplies it by three. And then we update that every year based on the Consumer Price Index.
However, researchers have been debating the current relevance of the Orshansky poverty measure for quite some time now. Hamilton says arguments against the continued use of the measure have been offered.
In 1965, far less women were in the workplace. So now we have childcare costs, transportation costs for women. We have healthcare costs that have far outpaced inflation, and we have regional differences too. The Orshansky Index doesn't take into account cost of living in Arkansas versus New York City, and we don't even spend a third of our income on food anymore. So now we spend about 8% of our income and far more on childcare, transportation, healthcare, and housing is a huge part of our household budgets.
Other concerns raised by researchers and experts are that the measure does not take into account the standards of living that have steadily increased since 1965, sudden changes in family sizes and situations, and the impact of key governmental policies such as payroll taxes and food stamps that affect the disposable income of families. Taking into account the criticisms against the Orshansky poverty measure, in 2010, the U.S. Census Bureau proposed a supplemental poverty measure. Make no mistake, the supplemental poverty measure will not replace the current poverty measures. It exists only in theory, even though experts agree that it better represents the state of poverty in the country. As for why that's the case, Hamilton offers a possible explanation.
With this new measure, we would probably include about 3 million more Americans in the category of poverty, which is roughly the size of Arkansas. And this supplemental poverty measure would be a much more useful tool in determining eligibility for social programs, those sorts of things. If we move to the supplemental poverty measure, let's say in this administration, we could say then that under this administration, 3 million more Americans became poor, which wouldn't actually be the case. It would be a definitional change, but there hasn't been a lot of will to make that the official poverty measure in the U.S.
But while social scientists, statisticians, and policymakers are debating the accurate official definition of poverty, what does it look like at the human level? Are we forgetting about real people among numbers and statistics? Brenda Zedlitz is the director of the Economic Opportunity Agency of Washington County Children's Services. She works with families in poverty on a daily basis. She says programs at EOA follow strict criteria based on point system. These points correspond to the level of need. So the more points you score means the more help you need, and vice versa. She says numbers and points system do help people like her.
Because you can't make those decisions. Because if you decide for this family, and this is the one family that falls apart, you're going to have to live with all everything that happened to them is going to become indirectly your responsibility because you chose this one, not that one. So it's just better to have that point system.
The EOA Head Start and Early Head Start program provides quality developmental and preschool education to children under 5 years of age, plus support services for their families such as childcare during the day. Last year, the program attracted more than 1,200 applications for only 381 spaces provided by federal resources. Zedlitz says a mother in that situation could very well have to choose between keeping her job or staying at home with her child.
So she has to make a decision. Do I stay home and keep my child safe, miss work, take an absence, maybe unexcused from work because I'm not going to have documentation that anyone was sick or there was an emergency at home. If she's court ordered to show stability, perhaps she's trying to keep custody of her children, or perhaps she's working on increasing her credit rating so that she can purchase something and move her family to a better living situation.
Zedlitz has been a social worker for 10 years. When asked what poverty looks like on a human level, she had this to say.
I think the main thing about poverty is that it is exhausting. And when a person lives in it, they often become so weary that the day-to-day survival just becomes the main focus. There's really not a hope for a better future. There's not a hope that things are going to change because it seems like every time they almost get to a different point in their life, something happens and it all disintegrates and they have to start over. And, there's an incredible human spirit in people that there are some people that can take it over and over and just keep at it until they make that difference. The right circumstances, the right situation, and they almost, it's like they just are rocket blasted out of it. But most often it's very difficult. It's a struggle.
Tomorrow on this Ozarks at Large series on poverty, we talk about who is poor in the state and some misconceptions regarding the poor.
One of the biggest myths is that people who are poor are not working, either are not working or are not willing to work. You know, that they're just kind of living the high life here because they've figured out a way to game the system and not have to work for a living. I mean, I just think that is... that mythology has always been with us. It's sometimes more powerful than it is at other times.
For Ozarks at Large, I'm Iti Agnihotri Mudholkar.